Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Thursday, November 9th, 2023, 2 weeks till Thanksgiving, Dave.
Oh, my gosh. How can it be? Time just keeps on rolling.
No.
Hey, happy International...
I'm thinking of a turkey.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Happy International Adoption Day.
How about that?
Hey, it's a deeply personal day for my wife and me, Melody. 27 years ago, we adopted our daughter. For couples experiencing the pain of infertility, adoption can be a wonderful way to become parents. However, there are other kinds of people who adopt children each year as well. Maybe they simply want to provide a home for a child in need, or maybe a woman has a medical condition that would make it dangerous to carry a baby. Others adopt because they are single but still wish to have children. And on the other side of the spectrum, there are many reasons children are given up for adoption. An unwed mother may feel she's too young to take responsibility for a child. That happened to be the serendipitous circumstance that led to our wonderful experience. Or a mother may realize she doesn't have enough resources to adequately care for a child, but doesn't want to abort it. Sadly, many children become in need of a home when one or both parents die. While adoption is a beautiful process, it can also be sad to realize the number of children who are in need of a home. According to the UN's Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF, more than 150 million children throughout the world are in need of a home today. This number includes the nearly 500,000 children that are in the U.S. foster system. Each year in this day, those affected by adoption are encouraged to draw a smiley face on their hand and to take a photo. So if you see that today, that's what it's all about. Help awareness for adoption. This is a great day for both adoptees and their parents to share their unique adoption journeys. And so we do so, Melody, with great pride and much love.
And she's such... She's an awesome girl. She really is. And
she's got the spirit.
She does. And you know what? You wouldn't know that she was adopted because, you know, I mean, it's, you know.
Indeed.
It's awesome. It really is awesome. Well, let's go ahead and see what gold did today. Do we have an awesome day for gold? Well, it was up.
It was good.
Does that make it awesome? No, it was up $7.50. It was up much higher, almost another $8. But, you know, hey, 1958. Silver was up a couple pennies at $22.67. Both the white metals, platinum and palladium, were negative today. Platinum was down $10 at $868, and palladium was down almost 6% on the day. So not a good day in the white metals, especially for palladium. USDX today was higher 0.39 at 105.93, so that's moving up to that 106 level. Crude oil was up a few cents at 75.51. Paper markets today, I think they had a little bit of a reversal after Powell said the Fed is not confident it has enough, has done enough to bring inflation down. So the markets reversed, and then the Dow was down 200 points, S&P down 35, and the NASDAQ was down about 1%, 128 points at 13,521. European markets, nothing concerns them at all. They were all positive. Asia, you had the Hang Seng down just by 57 points, which is no big deal. 10-year yield, that moved up a little bit, 4.64%, 4.64%. And oil today, my natural gas, was down almost 2%, 3.049. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm doing another program this evening, and the one thing I wanted to talk about, I don't know if I have it here. I guess I don't have it handy. We've been talking about the ACH payments, but there was also, what did I do with it? Yeah. One of the China banks got hit, and it's affected the treasury markets. And I'll see if I can't find that on the next break, and maybe we can bring that in and talk, unless we already have it, Dave.
No, no, we have the ACH issue. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll look for that. I'll look for that. And we can go ahead and start the program today about oil production. It seems like the U.S. is pumping oil at a record rate. It's not helping our prices, but we're exporting it. We can't keep it here in the States, but we're exporting it. We saw domestic crude oil prices fall to their lowest level in more than 3 months. They did tick higher, although, as I said earlier, the WTI, which is the U.S. benchmark, is down more than 15% to roughly $76 a barrel. And, of course, we see Russia and the Saudi Arabia, they're sticking to their production cuts to help prop up prices. But you know what? We're seeing a global slump. The demand has been slumping, even in China. So, and we look at China as the second largest consumer of crude oil behind the U.S. So I guess they're the only ones in the whole world that is experiencing a lackluster economy.
Huh.
I say that very... tongue-in-cheeky.
I see your cheek protruding.
You see that? Okay.
Well, meanwhile, U.S. oil production is steadily ratcheting up. I mean, in the first week of November, the numbers say that production here in the States hit 13.2 million barrels a day so far, a new record. Now, the decline of oil prices comes despite the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, the kind of geopolitical conflict that would usually result in some kind of fear premium in the oil market that would really spike prices. The previous wars between Israel and Arab states, like the 73 Yom Kippur War, resulted in massive oil shocks. But U.S. production is a lot bigger now in global markets, excuse me, as is Chinese demand. And both are developing in a way that seems to favor lower prices. Now we'll see if that continues, especially if things start to get out of hand in Hezbollah and Iran, and particularly Russia, start to ramp things up. So things are really uncertain right now. And it's hard to predict where things are going to go in the next couple of weeks, much less months.
And you know what's interesting? It's weird. It's just like this quiet spell over everything. I mean, I can't ever recall it ever being. I mean, sure, you might have a week or two, maybe a day, you know, when things get. But this is different, considering the degree of these various situations around the world, and I mean, these huge things, and it's just like, it's just quiet, it's just happy. That's almost more frightening than if things were actually happening, because, you know, then you know things are happening and you can do things. But when nothing's happening and it's just nice and quiet, it's like, okay, I'm waiting for, you know, the hammer to fall. And, you know, it's kind of creepy, Dave. You know, and we're going to, and I think when we talk a little bit more about the ACH and what happened to the China's biggest bank, and you know, how different something else was held ransom.
But beauty's in the eye of the beholder too. For example, if you happen to tune into the Republican silver medalist debate last night, you'd think that nothing was right in the world.
It's true.
So that was anything but quiet. So I think it depends on who's talking and who's listening, and you know, at any given moment in time, and who you're listening to. So now more than ever, it's important to be listening to more than one news source. I mean, really pay attention to people who are telling you the truth. Now, when you know, the problem with news sources today, with so many of them, is that they're opinionated, and it's much harder today, and has been for the last few decades even, to parse through you know, what's fact and what's opinion. You know, as Moynihan once said, you know, you're welcome to your own set of opinions, but not to your own set of facts. But, you know, hey, what's what? it's more and more difficult to know the difference. So you really, really, really have to pay attention and be critical in the way you approach today's events, whatever side of the aisle you're on. And hopefully, you know, you're not necessarily on either side on any given day. I'm one who's a big believer that you shouldn't believe in labels. We could spend a whole segment or a whole program on that. Maybe we should sometime about the danger, I think, in labels, particularly in politics. But I don't want to get too far off the subject, Melody. So I'll shut up and let you say what you were going to say.
I forgot. It's been so long. I do agree, and I do watch both, but I do fall into the camp after doing the research that I do and really try to read between the lines, and that's what you really have to do, is read between the lines. Because you can take some of the best reports, you know, out there, the good news out there, and either side, you can blow holes through them. But I do think this country has some serious issues, and I do believe some of those topics were mentioned. I don't know if they were accurately addressed. I didn't watch the whole thing last night, but I think some of the topics were important. I do think we have a border crisis. I do think we have a drug crisis, and these things are just going beyond any. It's open. No one is trying to stop anything or address anything, and we have some of the best border laws on the books, but they're not being enforced. So these are issues, and, you know, so our debt is a big problem. You know, we've had a Federal Reserve that has been able to, you know, create money out of thin air, bail out how many banks and corporations and so forth. You got airlines that are making multiple billions of dollars in profits, but yet every time they get in a bad shape, they come run into D.C. for more money. And so these are the things that need to stop. We're going to be facing and going down the road of, oh, the government shutdown. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And it's like the politicians in D.C. really need to start working both sides. And all they do is campaign. All they do is they're on the phone. And, yeah. And I believe the large part of them are very corrupt. And if they're not corrupt, they will be. We've got some major, major problems in this country. And I don't think anybody's paying any attention or addressing any of them in the proper manner. I don't care who they are.
I would disagree to the extent that I believe the process is corrupt. I don't believe that at the root, the individuals themselves are corrupt. I believe that most of them have been corrupted by the process. Now, maybe I'm playing with semantics, and if you believe that's the case,
Not be corrupt going in there, guilty. But they do, and it might be the process. However, if you're working in a system and you're knowing it's corrupt, if you don't try and fix it and change it, or leave it, you're as just as corrupt as you're working the system and you're benefiting from it.
Well, yeah, but what if you do try? What if you have tried to change and you just know that, or you come up against a majority that, and maybe it's a significant majority that just has no interest. In both parties, or in a court system that transcends any party, any potential bipartisan interest in improving that process.
Our country is even worse off. Then we are more corrupt. Then we're just as like any other nation, you know, that is. And that's the problem. So how do we fix it?
I don't know.
It can't.
Well, I kind of know, but again, that's a topic
for a
whole other program. It can be fixed.
We don't have the politicians in D.C. that have a spine in order to fix it. You can't fix it by throwing more money at it. You can't fix it by giving billions and billions and billions of dollars to these companies that already have billions of dollars to open a factory here to factory there. You know, I mean, how do you fix these things? It's,
well,
if you,
once,
if you have an one, idea.
One step at a time. Let's have a program devoted to that.
About
that.
Yeah. So you pretty much have to start from scratch. And how do you, after the system corrects itself, everything always corrects itself on its own eventually. So And that's what we talk about here. When it eventually corrects, it's even the earth, everybody's worried about climate control. The earth will fix itself, as it has for billions or millions of years, or billions of years, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, that was an interesting segment. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And I guess we can just go ahead and continue on. I don't know if there was any one particular thing that you wanted to touch on, Dave, in particular.
No, not in particular. I mean, I found this next article interesting. The Aspen Economic Strategy Group, this group of elitists, talking about stabilizing the nation's debt. The public debt, that is, ironically. You want to talk about that a little?
Sure. Sure, we can. Well, do you have an extra $2,400?
Dave? Well, it depends what for. I mean, ironically, I've got some balance left on a home equity line of credit, but I'm not going into debt to for my share of
bail out the government to bail out our spenders in DC. But that's what they're saying. They said it would take tax increases, spending cuts or taxing, well, we know they're not going to cut, so it'd be tax increases equivalent to $2,400 per American per year. I don't know how many years, forever, I guess. And this is the brutal math that was spelled out in a Building a More Resilient U.S. Economy from the Aspen, as you mentioned, the Aspen Economic Strategy Group. And these were guys that are former, I hate that you have to say guys and girls anyway, former policymakers, top executives. Little Timmy Geithner, is that who did this thing? Little Timmy Geithner and Hank Paulson? Yeah. I don't know how much credence we want to put in the little Timmy Geithner. What did he do during the it was something, he knew that something was going on and he just denied it and denied it and then actually came out and said, yeah, I knew. Anyway, it shows that to reduce the deficits to the point where the public debt levels off as a share of GDP, Congress would have to enact spending cuts and tax increases beginning in 2027, equivalent to 2.8% of GDP, or nearly $800 billion per year. And that's if everything stays the same, right, Dave?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, I saw an article where we're going to be over $50 trillion in debt by 2033 or something like that. So
a little bit longer, but
yeah. So there's no way they can keep it the same. That's the problem. But there is no political momentum, as we talked about, for deficit reduction. Republicans are trying to extend the tax cuts that are scheduled to expire in 2025. I don't know what else to say in there. You know, they're. To me, it seems like it's a little bit, it's interesting. It seems like it's politics as usual, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, this has become near and dear to my heart. I wrote a 4-part series recently on deficits and debt in our American Survival newsletter. On part 3, I wrote that the Congressional Budget Office estimated this summer that annual budget deficits would nearly double over the next 10 years, averaging $2.7 trillion a year by 2033. That is, if nothing else happened and current policies continued unabated. So the projected cumulative deficit over that period would be $20.2 trillion. That'd be the result of a growing gap between spending and revenues. Measured in relation to the size of the economy, deficits would grow from 6% of GDP next year to 6.9% in 2033 to 8% in 2043 and 10% in 2053, well above their 50-year average of 3.6%. Now that's, you know, the gap, the deficit, that is. And as a result of those deficits, the debt held by the public, which is a little over $26 trillion right now, would also increase from a current 99% of GDP to 119% at the end of 2033. And at that time, the share of GDP would reach the highest level ever recorded in the U.S. and would be on track to rise even further. If nothing else would happen, debt would be about 152% of GDP by 2043, and by 10 years later, 195% of GDP, assuming, of course, that debt bubble hadn't exploded by then. I don't know what to say about that. 195%. And by then, the servicing of the debt, net interest on the debt. And you can only imagine the impact. Now CBO and its in its so-called baseline economic assumptions, which essentially assumes a fairly steady rate of whatever, GDP, interest rates, inflation, in reality, as net interest payments on our growing debt would continue to increase. That would have a compounding effect on interest rates at the secondary treasury market, and rates would just continue to spiral out of control. And, you know, I think there'd be that, whatever, that black swan reset well before 2053. But, I mean, who knows?
How about 2024?
Yikes!
Is my guess. You know, who know, you know, and that's what we always say. And I think, but I do think next year is going to be a difficult year, and more so than we've had in the past. And all the signs are leading that way. But yet, and you're right, you know, this is all based on today and those numbers. And but you would also think they should be able to base numbers, not only projecting the same going forward, but a period of time that has passed as a percentage of gain, because most likely what has happened in the past is going to happen in the future. So, you know.
Well, yeah. That's,
so you would think they would should be able to calculate that, saying this is if it all stays the same, this is if we base and include what happened between you know, 2008 and 2011, with this is what it would be, and this is the difference, or something like that.
Well, know? there are groups that do that, but I mean, in terms of, I mean, they're like the Office of Management and Budget, the Congressional Budget Office, as a matter of tradition, use the baselines based on current policies continuing essentially ad infinitum.
Well, that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, I think it just it.
I think it gives you
the. It allows for steady expectations.
But it also gives you the
among their simpleton elected constituents.
But it also gives you the. But it also gives you the vision of that it's impossible to continue. As is, it's impossible.
Well,
it is a doomed system, and it needs to be corrected, or they're just going to let it fall on its own.
It also shows essentially a best case scenario, which should be a humbling situation for these. These people on Capitol Hill, unfortunately, far too many of them don't take it as such. You know, it's just the politics as usual. I mean, you know, they talk about, you know, suspension of the rules, and who cares about this thing called regular order? I mean, they haven't had a budget in years. They don't pass individual appropriation bills, although under Mike Johnson, you know, he's saying, hey, we're going to do that this time. And I mean, we'll see if it gets done. Coming up on another deadline in 8 days. I'm sure there's going to have to be another continuing resolution to keep the doors open. I don't know what that means. I guess we'll keep them open for a month or two, but until we have this debate again after Christmas, it just isn't a good way to do business, Melody.
No,
the people's isn't. Business.
You're right. It is not. Let's go ahead. You have a levity is golden today.
Well, you know, I do. I'm almost tempted to say let's put it off and go to some other news, just because of the nature of the topic.
Okay.
Do you mind if we skip over it?
No, not at all. Are you kidding me?
let's skip over. It's almost
all right.
It's almost too full of levity.
Okay. All righty. Well. I think we all know this. The only people in this country that really have the funds are senior citizens at this point, those who have worked and saved and so forth. And they are continue to be a key driver of spending. Older generations are sometimes more insulated from the negative aspects of maybe the current economy. They seem to be less exposed to these interest rate hikes, higher housing costs, because they're always downsizing. And, you know, they do have some income from maybe different types of investments, rental properties, interest, dividends, their pensions, and so forth. And plus, I believe our group of older people were brought along the lines to save. I think we're, you know, baby boomers is, you know, is basically that group. We've been conditioned to save, unlike those behind us. So the spending power of older Americans will continue to be the driver of the economy. So I hope they get their purchasing power protected by gold so that they can continue to be. And if they keep everything in paper and we have these problems that we're going to talk about, they stand to lose a lot of their and a much lower standard of living. According to credit card data from the too big to fail Bank of America, people that are born before 1965 are the only ones increasing their spending in year-over-year terms. Younger generations' retail spending has been on the decline. Most analysts, economists, expect an overall consumer spending to continue to slow relative to the past 2 years, as we saw the interest rates and housing costs climb. Those are two pretty obvious things, Dave. You would think that most people would see it and understand it, but they just continue to ignore it.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you caught yourself. I thought I heard a Freudian slip when you said 1965. I thought I heard you say 1960 fun.
I said it, and then I corrected it.
those were fun times.
Days,
oh,
they?
My gosh. You know.
I was 10 years old. I mean.
The Motown days. Boy, what good music there was in those days.
My favorite.
about savings and just the mentality we grew up in. I remember vividly my grandparents moved. They were Kennedy generation workers. They were moved by, regardless of your politics, they were one of those couples moved by his call to do what you could for your country. And they actually packed their bags and moved to the nation's capital in the early 60s and spent a career in Washington. Oh. And I remember being at their apartment for my 16th birthday. Mm. And after my birthday dinner, I opened up a card, and inside was a Chris. It's the first time I had ever seen a Ben Franklin bill, $50 bill.
Wow.
And my grandmother said, "Now take a good look at it, because I'm taking it back and we're putting it in a checking account. A savings account. And we're going to, every year now until you're finished with college, we're going to, every birthday, we're going to put another $50 in there. And if you have, you know, extra money, you can put it in throughout the years. And then when you're finished college, we'll turn the checking account over to you, blah, blah, blah." And in fact, that's exactly what they did every year. And I remember the other thing they told me is that always remember, take care of yourself first. Every time you get paid, put some money aside, even if it's only $5, take care of yourself first. And initially I thought, well, isn't that selfish? But no, it's smart. It was the smartest thing I think they could have ever told me as a young boy. I wasn't even an adult. I mean, I was 16 years old. What did I know about money? Except, oh my gosh, I have money to go out and buy more albums, to buy more bell-bottom jeans, to buy my 3-inch heeled shoes. Anyway.
Thanks for sharing that, because it is really important. And we are that generation.
So. Yeah. Save, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. We'll be right back.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, babe. Don't say babe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off, taking care of client business, this final segment. You can get her at 1-800-375-4188. Apologize in advance for any coughing fits you may hear. Got this ongoing cold that just won't leave my system. And my dog happens to be nearby outdoors. Couldn't get her inside, so you may hear some residual noise in the background. Hey, hundreds of thousands of payments never landed in U.S. bank accounts last week because of a so-called processing error. I know Melody and Butch talked about this last week. Days later, the private company responsible for that error is still wrestling with the fallout. The clearinghouse processes a large portion of the bank electronic transfers that happen in the country each day. Well, the other day it said that some payments were delayed last Thursday because instructions were sent to financial institutions with the account number and names of customers masked. That made it impossible for banks to immediately process and post the payments on Thursday or Friday. In many cases, these transfers continued to be delayed, the clearinghouse, which is owned by 22 of the nation's largest banks, said. The glitch affected almost a million transactions, 850,000. In fact, that represents a small percentage, roughly less than 1% of the 130 million payments that move across the automated clearinghouse network on a daily basis, roughly. That network, which has existed for decades, that lets bank route payments to each other electronically. Banks use the system to send direct deposit paychecks or transfer money customers use to pay mortgage and utility bills. It processed almost $8 billion in transactions during the third quarter, according to the National Automated Clearinghouse Association, the NACHA. The clearinghouse's ACH operation essentially handles half U.S. commercial ACH volume. The Federal Reserve has a separate ACH network in the U.S. that it said wasn't affected. By last week's glitch. Now, to unwind the error, banks that tried to send money last week had to resend their original instructions for payments to be transferred. When the affected customers see their money depends on when their originating banks resends the transaction. J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest U.S. bank, is refunding overdraft fees for affected customers who didn't have enough money in their accounts to pay bills. Morgan, the nation's largest bank, is still seeing higher than normal problem reports from its customers as of, well, today. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup also experienced a surge of customer complaints. The clearinghouse tried to make it clear in a statement that banks were not at fault, saying the error was not caused by the financial institutions that originated or received the payments or the businesses or other account holders that initiated them. It added the November 2nd error was an unfortunate and isolated issue, and immediate steps have been taken to prevent a reoccurrence. Well, let's hope so. Sounds perhaps like a hacker was at work. Well, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said the Fed must be willing to rethink beyond the complex mathematical simulations it traditionally uses to forecast the economy. You go, guy. In opening remarks at a conference celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Fed Board's Division of Research and Statistics, Powell said, "Intellectual rigor has to be combined with flexibility and agility. Even with state-of-the-art models and even in relatively calm times, the economy frequently surprises us," he added. "But our economy is flexible and dynamic and subject at times to unpredictable shocks, such as global financial crisis or a pandemic. At those times, forecasters have to think outside the models." Powell didn't comment on the outlook for monetary policy or the economy in his remarks. RNS, as the division is known, provides the policymaking Federal Open Market Committee with an economic forecast 8 times a year, as well as updates on current data and research on policy and economic topics. The division is currently headed by Stacy Tetlin, the first woman to lead the unit, which employs dozens of PhDs. Forecasting has been a difficult exercise for the Fed in the post-pandemic economy. Fed staff continued to call the burst of inflation transitory, as we recall, for most of 2021, before it kept accelerating the year after and reached the peak annual rate of 9.1% in June of that year. After a string of bank failures in March of this year, the staff forecast a mild recession starting later in the year before ditching that call just a few months later. The economy grew around its long-term trend rate at a 2.1% annualized pace in the second quarter, and then boomed at a 4.9% rate in the third quarter. Fed forecasters do this work on the biggest stage and with the highest stakes, knowing that the economy very often surprises us, Powell said, adding that the job takes large doses of courage and humility. Officials gather next on December 12th and 13th, and we'll see fresh reports on retail sales, hiring, and inflation before the meeting. Future markets are pricing in almost no chance of an interest rate increase and predict the current level of the Fed's benchmark rate, 5.25% to 5.5%, will mark the peak, that is, the end of the tightening cycle. Hey, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. This is a real important story. Yesterday, in their Wall Street on Parade newsletter, Pam and Russ Martins reported that commercial banks were, quote, in such desperate need for cash this past spring that they borrowed more from the Federal Home Loan banks than they did during the financial crash of 2008. The Martins point to another part of the report showing that J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest bank, both by assets and deposits in the U.S., has not repaid the money that First Republic Bank had borrowed from the Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco. Morgan was allowed to buy First Republic Bank when it failed on May 1st. The Martins add that J.P. Morgan Chase's report for the third quarter that it filed with the SEC indicated that it had $37.9 billion in outstanding advances from the Federal Home Loan banks as of the end of the third quarter. It reported that $26.2 billion of that was related to its acquisition of First Republic. The Martins say that means the largest bank in the U.S., which has the ability to borrow from the Fed's discount window or the Fed's $500 billion standing repo facility, instead chose to borrow almost $12 billion from a government mortgage program for low-income families and not repay another $26 billion owed from its acquisition of First Republic Bank. J.P. Morgan Chase's questionable use of advances from the Federal Home Loan banks date back to at least 2013. In addition to being the largest borrower from the Federal Home Loan banks as of the second quarter of 2013, J.P. Morgan was also being sued for fraud by the Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh. According to a 2013 financial filing in September of 2009, the Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh had filed two complaints in state court for the recovery of the bank's losses relating to nine private label mortgage-backed securities purchased from J.P. Morgan Securities in an aggregate principal amount of about $1.7 billion. Martin say, according to the filing, some claims had been dismissed, but there remain claims against J.P. Morgan for fraud, negligent representation, and state and federal security laws claims. J.P. Morgan Chase ended up paying the staggering sum of $13 billion to settle charges with the Justice Department and other regulators for selling what the Martins characterize as selling toxic mortgage products. Instead of promoting a financially stable housing market, Jamie Dimon's bank was a major participant in causing the worst housing price collapse since the Great Depression. Way to go, Martins. Then, in today's newsletter, the Martins report that J.P. Morgan has paid close to $1.1 billion in legal expenses in just the past 6 months. A big portion of that went to the law firm WilmerHale, which has been representing the bank in multiple lawsuits involving the bank's history of financial dealings with child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. A fairness hearing is being conducted in Judge Jed Rakoff's courtroom in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York as we speak. The Martins say, quote, it's a big embarrassment for both WilmerHale and J.P. Morgan Chase that 16 state attorneys general and the attorney general for the District of Columbia are objecting to the terms of the agreement along with two Epstein claimants. They go on to say Wilmer Hale and David Boies' settlement agreement hoped to pay Boies and his fellow lawyers working on behalf of the victims $87 million in legal fees, $2.5 million in legal expenses, and by blanket immunity going forward for all those J.P. Morgan executives and the bank's wealthy clients, ultra-wealthy clients, who were regular visitors to Epstein's mansions, quote, slash brothels, as well as the bank's employees who were funneling $40,000 to $80,000 in hard cash each month to Epstein for over a decade, while the bank failed to file the legally mandated suspicious activity reports. As the Martins characterize it, it's a sweet deal for lawyers and a sweet deal for recidivist money laundering five-time felon J.P. Morgan Chase. That's insane. It is high time that the government finally break up this filthy scumbag casino masquerading as a nationally chartered bank. To the J.P. Morgan Chase Board of Directors, I say, to paraphrase the late Joseph Welch, have you no shame, no sense of decency? Unbelievable. Hey, last today, if you missed this news yesterday amidst all the Election Day news, total household debt levels continued to rise in the third quarter. Most of it came from a surge in credit card debt that Melody and I talked about on Tuesday, while borrowing troubles increased in a way that, if continued, could signal even more turbulence for the economy. In its quarterly report, the New York Fed said overall debt levels increased by 1.3% during the third quarter to $17.3 trillion. As we, again, reported on Tuesday's program, credit card borrowing levels rose by 4.7% to $1.08 trillion. Overall debt levels increased by 1.3% during the quarter to, again, $17.3 trillion. The surge in borrowing costs has waylaid activity in the housing market amid the highest mortgage rates in decades. And the landscape has, well, literally fueled worries that many Americans will struggle to manage their debt, especially as high levels of savings during the pandemic run down. Overall debt delinquency increased by 3% as of September from a 2.6% increase in the second quarter, according to the report, while still standing below the 4.7% delinquency rate seen in the fourth quarter of 2019, just ahead of the pandemic's arrival here in the States. The overall flow of debt moving into delinquency stood at a little less than 1.3% in the third quarter, compared to 0.94% in the third quarter of last year. The report also said increases in credit card delinquency rates were the most pronounced for those aged between 30 and 39. New York Fed report found that overall student loan debt rose by $30 billion to $1.6 trillion in the third quarter. The bank's data on this type of borrowing arrived after the restart of student loan debt payments, which had been put on hold during and a little bit after the pandemic. Hey, that is, well, all we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out another week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly blog and your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and especially to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. See you next week. Bye-bye.